Elliot, were you expecting to see generational pop star Michael Jackson appear in Counter-Strike in the last week or so?
I actually wasn't. No. I see a lot of the future, but I didn't. Less so of the past, which is obviously where Michael Jackson has come
from.
Yeah.
It felt a little odd that I woke up one day and looked at my phone and I went on Twitter and I saw something that basically said Michael Jackson is in Counter-Strike. And I went, I'm pretty sure you meant to say Fortnite. This is a different thing.
Does seem like the sort of thing Fortnite.
And then seem like Fortnite thing. And then I saw the videos.
So I'm convinced that I'd been Michael Jackson peaked before. I promise you, like I have said to my friends, this guy has just peaked me diagonally. Like, I swear to God he has. And they all think I'm insane. And then this thing came out about the Michael Jackson peak, and I was like, I knew it. I knew I wasn't going mad. I knew there was something wrong. Very upset.
So I didn't actually get to play during the Michael Jackson peak.
I think it's been like that for ages.
Like I was
just people haven't figured it out.
No, well, I hadn't been peaked, and then when it like became like a thing, I wasn't playing Counter-Strike at the minute because it's just like I had other shit going on. And by the time I started to play again, it was like, ah, it's been fixed. Even though it hasn't really been fixed, but it's like been mostly fixed to a degree, maybe.
I mean, I'm playing less CS2 than I was Go at the moment. It's just not as fun at the moment. So
we'll get into CS2 versus Global Offensive later in the podcast. We'll talk about it later. On this episode of Overtime Inferno, we talk about I Am Sydney, and then we dive into what everyone thinks about CS2 now that it's been out in professional play for like 20 minutes. Roll the intro. Welcome to Overtime on Inferno, your weekly round of all the big stories in CS2. Not CSGO. We're new game now. My name is Logan. This is AZ-esque.
It's John Podcast.
Let's get into it. So we have two bits. We have bits of stories today. We have Sydney, and then we have the other shit of Sydney, which is Counter-Strike 2 is out. It's being played competitively for the first time by like real teams, and there's a lot of opinions. Mm-hmm. So we're going to try and sift through the opinions on the variety of changes. So MR12, how the game feels. Is it ready? We'll do that stuff on the back half of the show. We're going to start with Sydney because that's what's going on right now. And Sydney's weird.
Yeah.
So I'm like very in on this. So if you haven't watched I Am Sydney, that probably means you're in America on the East Coast.
Or European.
Or in Europe. Yeah, or European.
It's pretty unwatchable for a lot of the world, to be honest.
I think it starts at like 9 p.m. for me, which is actually excellent time. Oh, okay. But that I just watched like the first two or three games. And
for
that's
me,
it
starts at like 3 and then finishes around midday. So I miss the whole thing. I see the first game of the night.
Welcome to Worlds watching for me.
Yeah, it's probably the reason I haven't watched any Worlds either, because they insist on having it for the Chinese. But at least Korea. Worlds, the majority of their viewership is on that time zone. It makes no sense in Counter-Strike nobody can watch it.
Yeah, I love Sydney. I love watching Sydney after the fact. But it really sucks to watch Sydney
like
during
it's borderline unwatchable.
So, coming into Sydney, there were 16 teams, and we've narrowed it down to just 6 at this point. So let's tell you how we got there. I'm going to start from the bottom up on teams that have been eliminated, and we'll talk about their journey. We'll start with Vertex, Australian team. Yeah. You may know one of the players, Malta. That may be it. I don't have a huge amount to say about Vertex.
They weren't really expecting to do much, right? Like,
no, this is one of those teams that's like, hey, we're super happy we got here because this is an Australian event. They won the Oceania closed qualifier. And for what it's worth, Greyhound was a Oceania invite ahead of it. So they are the second best team in Australia.
They probably are.
With some hard quotes around that. Well, I mean, there's Rooster, there's LFO. There were a couple. John Industries was here.
Yeah, love that team.
With Humongous.
Yeah, what a team. What a team.
Yeah, Humongous.
It is a shame great John player. Industries aren't at least right. It really is a shame. It'd be great if they were good.
But yeah, so there's a couple other teams, and this happened to be the team that gets through. They went out in last place. I'm not sure what more we expected. I think we can move on.
Pretty much.
Okay. Next on the list is Greyhound. See everything we just said about Vertex, but like they had a little bit more expectations.
It turns out home field advantage really doesn't matter that much. Who would have guessed?
Unless you're JKS.
But JKS is good everywhere. JKS has won in Kato and Cologne in the last like 2 years. I wouldn't call those his hometown.
Another 13, 16th place team is one of our favorites, Lin Vision.
Yeah. RIP West Melon.
Is one of the few full Chinese teams left.
Yeah. It is kind of good to see that, like, on the switch to CS2, there hasn't been that big a swing in, like, the bad teams getting better and the good teams getting worse. Anyway, who was the last 13th to 16th team to go out? Because I've forgotten.
Yeah, it's Vitality.
Yeah, no, my point still stands, I think.
So yeah, I left this team for the last one in the 13-16 because they need a little bit of a deeper dive. Yeah. If you had looked at this list of teams that was coming to this event, you'd probably say, you know, maybe Complexity will be this team. Maybe it'll be BetBoom, and they won't be as good online as they were online to qualify. Maybe it'll be Apex. They're bringing in a new player with Stiko. Fnatic just historically are bad in events once in a while and just kind of blow up. All of those are possible bottom four teams. But I don't think anyone would have guessed Vitality. And I don't think anyone would have guessed Vitality even after the news came out that Zonic was going to Falcons.
Yeah. There is a legendary football tweet which says something along the lines of, every week there is one crisis team in the Premier League. The goal is to not be it. And Vitality are this week's crisis team. They've lost some ones.
It's like
to overreact.
It's like a one LPL team dies every year at Worlds. Yeah.
There's always one crisis team, and this time it's Vitality. I mean, as you say, there's so many mitigating circumstances that you don't know which one to blame. Like,
okay, so let's talk about the circumstances. So one, Zonic's left. That's circumstance
not
number
long
one.
Before the event either.
Yeah. Circumstance number two, they have a new coach, which is kind of an old coach, which is Exitas. Yeah. Number three, Counter-Strike 2.
And you don't know how much they've been number practicing four, Counter-Strike 2 either.
Yeah, Counter-Strike 2 is a amalgamation of a lot of possible excuses. Yeah. Number four, the event is in Australia.
Yeah. There's so
and
much
I mean that
on.
In a total serious way, because every other event that we have normally, right, is like, oh, let's go to Poland. Okay, it's like a 1 hour difference. Let's go to Paris, 1 hour difference.
Well,
let's go
this
to
is
Germany.
No hour difference for the friend.
No hour difference. Let's go to Germany. No hour difference, I think. Yeah. I don't fully know European time zones. Let's go to America. Well, it's not as bad. I mean, like,
yeah, it's like four, it's like five hours. There's 6 hours backwards to the
East Coast. It's gamers at it's gamer
exactly.
hours.
Like when I watch US events, I don't have to change my sleeping pattern at all. I have to change my sleeping pattern to work European events, but not American events.
Let's go to Australia. Wake up at 2 a.m.
Yeah, literally. And it's also like a long flight. Like that does take it out of you.
It's like a 12-13 hour flight.
Completely takes it out of you. Like there's so many different mitigating circumstances. Oh, wasn't it also like best of ones? Largely?
Yeah, so the beginning of this event was so the way that they went out was they lost to BetBoom in the first in a best of one in a Counter-Strike score of 16-14.
Yeah, new team, best of one. Happened.
So okay. Then they lost to FaZe in a best of three.
Yeah. FaZe. It happens.
And that was it.
That's literally all that's happened.
That's the bit.
That was a whole event. It actually took them longer to fly than it did to go out.
I actually think that that
may be true. Definitely true. They were out in one day.
Yeah.
And the games took like 20 minutes each because it's fucking MR12.
We'll talk. Leave it for now. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. So yeah, I don't think anyone expected Vitality to be here. I think the community has done a very good job of not overreacting. And by I think the community has done a very good job, I think the community is too busy complaining about other shit to overreact about Vitality.
Pretty much. I think everyone's willing to give them a pass because so much has happened in the last week.
Yeah.
Like, you just sort of go, well,
I think everyone...
It's kind of the Wild West. It's the start of a new game.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the 9th to 12th place teams. So these are teams who won either their first match, their best of one, and then lost out, or lost their first match, won their lower bracket round, and then lost. So these teams are probably more expected here. So Apex and Fnatic, I'm going to group them together for right now.
I don't hate that.
Apex went out to Na'Vi, lost to Na'Vi, won against Vertex, lost to Gamer Legion. And then Fnatic won against Cloud9, lost to Ents, lost to Monty. These two teams are in similar but different situations in the fact that, like, Apex is integrating this new player sense, and so Stiko. Fnatic is Fnatic.
Fnatic are perennially slightly disappointing.
Yeah, but I feel like this was roughly where I expected both these teams to land in the end of the day. So nothing feels super off about this. The other two teams in this section, I think, are a little bit more surprising. We'll talk about the first, Na'Vi. They won against Apex, lost to Mousesports, won against FaZe. Sorry, lost to FaZe, and then was out.
Yeah. You sort of shrugged your
shoulders. Yeah, they also get a pass for what it's worth. Yeah. They played without Simple. Simple's not in Australia.
Yeah, they also just plugged in Blade to AWP.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, we don't want to change our roles. You are now Simple. I love it.
Yeah, I was watching it and I saw Blade pick up the scout and I was sitting there going, are they fucking making him AWP? Is that what we're doing? We're not going to have like Alexi. Like Alexi can kind of AWP.
What happened was in the team meeting before the game, Blade says to Alexi, look, you're in charge. Just tell me what to do. And Alexi goes, look, I've got a plan. I need to give you, you know how like in like RPG games, like NPCs like give you things and say, this will help you defeat the boss. Mm-hmm. Like, I've got something that will help you. And he just hands him this bracelet. And Blade goes, what the fuck is it? Why have you given me a bracelet? No. Hold. Just read the bracelet. And engraved in letters on this bracelet were just the words, what would Simple do? And they just gave it to Blade. And so Blade was like, Simple would buy a scout here and believe he would headshot everyone. So he bought a scout and it didn't work because he's not Simple.
Yeah.
He also just started flaming Blade, his teammates. No, I'm joking. He should have done.
Over five maps. Okay. No, sorry. Over seven maps. Blade got a 0.44 rating, a 0.49 rating. And then the lower semifinals, he posted his best rating of the tournament at 0.58.
Look.
But it was not particularly good.
AWPing on CS2 is a lot harder than it's on CSGO.
I also have something I want to credit Blade for, which is there's not many coaches who would do this, especially when Na'Vi have a sub on their roster.
I think they had.
Why Na'Vi chose not to use that sub?
I think there was probably like a reason they didn't. I don't think it was a choice to not use a sub.
You don't think it was a choice? Okay.
It's probably to do with visas, actually. But if Simple didn't get a visa, they wouldn't have applied for a visa for sub.
Yeah. And number two, which I think is the more fun part, Blade is now the first player to play professionally in CS 1.6, Condition Zero, Source, Global Offensive, and CS2, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, that's great. What a guy to do it as well. Like,
Blade is the guy
who deserves that title, in my eyes, at least.
I think the worst part is, like, I don't know when Blade was his best, right, quote-unquote, but I always remember Blade from Flipside.
Yeah. That's
that's the ingrained bit in my head when Bleed and Markolov were playing together, and that's
Electronic
and World.
Yeah, there was the time when he had Electronic on his team and just turned Electronic into the like the monster we know him as now.
That was
my overriding memory of Blade.
But I think it's interesting that Blade is able to play in five
yeah.
games.
Yeah, he is. He's cool. The type of guy you'd want that. Like, you don't want that title to go to somebody who's kind of like, I don't know how to describe.
Yeah, no,
it.
That like, title like, can't go
I like
to like
Blade, and I think that's a cool title for him to have.
Yeah, there's only a few players that it seems right going to. It can't go into like Joe Schmo, been like on.
He plays with. He's been on like Humongous on Giant Industries.
He's been on East. He's been. He was just. He played in like EPL, like ECL matches on like the worst team in the league for all
of
it or something like that.
If you ever get a HLTV page, can you request that your name is Joe Schmo, Joe Mechatronic Schmo?
I'm in.
Oh, fantastic.
All right, let's talk about the last team that ended in the bottom half, because I think this one's interesting too. So the last team that's here is Cloud9, Quarry Conundrum.
Yep.
I don't know how to think of
this.
They will
so continue to be this confusing part of
lost,
nonsense, I think.
Lost a best of one to Fnatic. One lower round one to Cloud to Lin Vision.
That also happens.
And then lost to Complexity.
Shouldn't happen.
I have a statistic about Cloud9. This statistic is brought to you by, I believe it's by Ryan Friend from Dust2.us.
Is it they've never won two games in a row?
No, the like new Cloud9 has no winning record against teams with Americans in them.
Right. I honestly thought, without even checking, I honestly thought it would be true that Cloud9 have not won two games in a row in their, like,
that may be it true, really, but the statistic that I got that Ryan sent to a server that I'm in was Cloud9 does not win series with Americans in it.
And that includes when they had their own American roster. They didn't win any games.
No, it's new Cloud9.
They didn't win any games with their own roster.
Yep, that tracks. So let me remind everyone that Cloud9 may even have their own excuses. Again, everyone has the CS2 excuse. I'm killing that excuse. That's not an excuse when everyone has the same excuse.
It's not an excuse. Cloud9 has their own reason for a little bit of, you know.
Yeah, it's a reason, but it's not an excuse. Hobbit's IGLing this team now, and not Electronic, which meant Electronic had a better tournament, but I don't think it fixed anything.
No, it's very funny to me that they kicked Nafani to make Electronic in-game leader, and then like a month later, like, oh, hang on, well, we might need an in-game leader. Shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a little bit more on the team Nafani than the general opinion was. Like, I always thought he was very harshly treated by the public who wanted him out of this team, because without Nafani, the players that you're demanding deserve a better in-game leader don't exist in the same way. Like, Shiro and Axile wouldn't, I mean, maybe they would be, but they wouldn't be the players we know if it weren't for the fact that they rose with Nafani. Like, he was as much a part of their rise as anyone else. And he was discarded. Like, it just seemed very hard. I mean, I guess it's the same with Intus. He was also discarded.
Yep, but he now plays for TSM.
Yeah, so they
okay.
both did better.
And hold on, Nafani's getting their revenge, so we'll talk about Nafani in a minute. I need to explain to the Spotify and Apple Podcasts and audio-only listeners what just happened. I went to take a drink of a glass of water while Elliot was talking, and my coaster stuck to the bottom of the glass
and
of water.
And it fell off as soon as I
put, yeah, as I started drinking, it just fell right onto my lap. If you didn't know, this podcast is available in video form, and you can watch stupid shit like that happen live on the ReTLDR YouTube channel. Okay, that ends our bottom half team. So let's talk about teams that actually started to win stuff. So the two teams that are in 7th, 8th place are the only two teams of this set have been eliminated already. So that's Gamer Legion and Monty. Yep. Both were actually pretty okay at this tournament. I think that's the best way to describe it. So, Gamer Legion
actually, like, we kind of thought Apex would be the team who solidified their spot at the top table because they lost
because they didn't make
change. They made one change where they lost JL.
They lost JL, but
Sassanito, who everyone thought was very good, and probably I mean I still do think he's pretty good.
Yeah,
but we thought they'd be the best of the three, and it turns out they're actually the worst of the three.
Yeah, so because Apex, the one move they did was JL. So well, let's talk about the three things, right? Like Apex lost JL, who everyone was like, yeah, he's a pretty good player, but he wasn't the guy at the major, yeah. Right? Like the guy at the major was Kixon and Jacob and Nock, right? Gamer Legion lost Suhi and Ima,
yeah,
who were the guys at the major, yeah. Right? Plus an IGL, right? Like.
Yeah, they lost a leader and a star.
And they brought in, roundabout way, Snacks and Volt from Into the Breach. They look great.
Yeah. They look so much better than they have right to.
Yeah, I'm the jury is not out yet on Snacks. He's played one event with them.
I think the jury is out.
The jury is out on Snacks. I'm not fully in on it yet. But
I'm
like,
always in
Volt
on Snacks.
Looks great.
I'm always in on Snacks, regardless of truth. I'm always in.
Volt looks great. Like, he looks just like he was in Into the Breach. He looks like a really good player. Yeah. Monty lost Boros, who was the world's best Mirage player. They replaced him with Bro, and it doesn't look like this team has missed a step. Maybe they're a little worse
on
Mirage, but like,
incredible about Monty is they didn't even replace it one for... I mean, actually, both of them didn't replace one for one. Like, Bro to Boros is a significant change in style. Like, I like Bro. Yep. I think he's a very good player, but he is not a aggressive star player in the way Boros is. Like, he is a completely different player. He is reliable. He is he has very solid mechanics. He makes the right decision a lot of the time, but he's a lot more passive and he's more of an anchor style player. He's actually very versatile. I think that's part of the benefit of him is. I'm pretty sure Demka said in an interview something like, oh, now we have people who are going to listen to instructions and not do their own thing, which, you know, is a bit of a shot at Boros, but also Boros, why would you want to tell Boros what to do? You don't need to tell him what to do. He knows what to do. Whereas Bro is a bit more controlled. And to their credit, I thought they might struggle losing that firepower for a player who is, you know, more tactically sound, but they've actually consolidated, figured it out, and they're still a really dangerous team.
Yeah, it's weird. The way that this worked out is weird. Monty and Gamer Legion both had decently good runs. They both lost lower finals. Monty had a whole run through the lower finals after they lost to Complexity, and then they lost to Complexity again, which we'll talk about Complexity in a minute. Gamer Legion won against FaZe, lost to BetBoom, who, again, we'll talk about in a minute. Won against Apex, which was kind of... It was a battle of just kind of where everyone is, where everyone stands after the major. Yeah. Because Gamer Legion, Apex, now we're like, 6 months out? A little under that? And, like, a lot has changed. So where do we stand on these overperforming teams from the major?
I think Gamer Legion versus Apex is really... a really interesting storyline at the moment in Counter-Strike.
Yeah, so do I.
I think people tunnel vision on like, oh, who's the best team in the world? But like, the way Gamer Legion and Apex, the way their fortunes have changed following the major is really interesting.
Yeah, and it's weird. I actually look at the four teams that like were really good from the major as a group, right? Like Gamer Legion, Apex, Monty,
Vitality.
And Into the Breach. No, I look at those four teams as a group, and like those four teams have had very different paths.
Incredibly different.
I guess Gamer Legion and Monty, I guess, have had kind of the same path. Their stars got removed, and they were able to rebuild and keep the same. Apex lost a role player and seemed to have disappeared.
Yeah, they've kind of fallen apart
and like become
against or lost.
And they're falling apart. And then Into the Breach sold all their good players. And are now rebuilding on this weird international team that has Bemis in it.
Yeah, that team is cursed. It's one of those teams that you look and go, this team... You know what I said about Na'Vi when they were made? It's too weird to work. Into the Breach is far too weird to work.
But, like, the point in the end of the day is, like, these four teams made three very separate plans on how to recover from, wow, we just did well at the major and we've had players poached from us. Yeah. And they're in three very different states of it working.
It's a really interesting case study.
Because it's one of the only times that we have in Counter-Strike of like, oh, all of these teams had roughly the same change happen to them at the same time. Let's see how it works out.
Yeah. And it turns out not getting a star player seems to be the way to do it, bizarrely.
Yeah. More than some of their parts or something like that. Let's talk about the teams that are still in it. So teams that won their groups are Mouse and G2.
Yep.
G2 shouldn't really surprise anyone. No. They're really fucking good. Mm-hmm. And especially with Vitality not being really fucking good, G2's heir to the throne.
It's also a game where tapping is pretty much the meta at the moment. And that's only going to help Nico.
Nico has actually said that he does not feel very good in CS2 right now.
Yeah, but I think people just say that all the time. But you know, I do agree. It doesn't feel right. But.
Yeah. Mouse Sports just have kind of started to figure themselves out. They're playing with a sub, Nexus, who is older than Jim and Pat.
Everyone's older than Jim Fat.
Who he's subbed before. Yeah.
He's like 20. He's like 10 or something. Like, he's a child.
But yeah, so they've looked fine. Suhi has obviously made this team a considerable amount better.
He's a fucking miracle worker.
Yeah,
he must be a genius. Like he must actually be a genius. Everything he touches turns to gold. Like genuinely, everything he I don't know what he does. It's really hard to like point at a team and say this is what he does really well, except. He turned Mouse NXT into three times Academy winners. All of those players went to a different in-game leader and did nothing. He then went to Gamer Legion, made the major final. I mean, look at like Immer now. As much as I like Immer, look at him now.
He's not the same player. Yeah.
Some of those Gamer Legion players have stayed and actually, you know, look pretty solid. But
yeah, like Acor and Izak have
still,
looked
yeah,
fairly
they're still
good.
Pretty good. A major final with these team with these players, and then he's come back to Mouse and they won Pro League, and now like they're doing well at Sydney again, like in a new game. Like this guy's a fucking genius. Like he's a prodigy, an actual prodigy, maybe more so than Monazy.
He's a different type of prodigy. Monazy is a very you see it and you understand it. Suhi has a very different type of. Prodigial mind of it's the brain bit. Yeah. It's the way that he's able to lead other people and elevate their current standing. I don't want to spend a huge amount of time on Mouse because they look really good and I'm afraid I'm gonna jinx them doing even better if we talk
they've
more
got
about
fucking
them.
Standing and they're still shitting on everyone.
No, they're doing really well.
He must be a god tier mind of the game. Like
yeah,
I don't know if there's any other in-game leader who can do what he's doing. I actually don't.
I think there is, like, two, maybe.
Carrigan, maybe.
Yin, maybe. Glaive, maybe.
I don't.
I don't even know about Glaive.
Glaive did it
but,
with
but the
one
problem
team,
is that
but
the two people we just said are Hall of Fame IGLs ever.
The thing like, about Suhi is every time I think, oh yeah, no, he, like when you compare him to the Hall of Fame in game leaders, like it's kind of too early. But every time I think, oh okay, he's going to be tested now. He just goes well over it. Like he's not even passing it. He's well over it. Like I thought this Mouse team would take like a year and then maybe they'd challenge for things. He won Pro League within like 6 months.
I don't even think it was 6 months.
It was. When was the major? Like May?
We're under 6 months from
the major.
The major
was May,
right?
and won it probably in happened. Fucking October, early October.
Yeah, so 5 months?
Yeah, four or five months.
Okay, I want to look at quarterfinals. So these are the matches that will happen Friday.
Will happening.
Technically. And it's like Friday at 1:30.
It's will happening, a friend of Joe Schmo.
Yes.
Humongous.
So One of these matches is two teams that I kind of expect to be here. One of these is two teams I didn't. Let's talk about the expected one first. Ents against FaZe. This one made sense. FaZe is kind of just a team that is super volatile and it's all over the place. And if they're going to do well, I feel like it's always within chaos.
Yeah.
I think the release of a new game is about as chaotic as I can give it to them. So they'll do decently well within chaos.
And Rops is just...
Rops happens to be...
In the nicest way, Rops is a freak. Like, yeah. He will take everything new in this game. He will find stuff out that nobody else will. He will figure out how to be the best in the world at this game. And he'll figure it out quicker than anyone else because he's a fucking genius.
The other team on the board here is Ents, who I think is the exact diametric opposition to FaZe. They do well
I don't know about... No, Snappy loves chaos. Snappy calls some of the most chaotic, aggressive rounds I've ever seen.
No. In-game, yes, he loves chaos. But I think in general, Ents have always been a... They are extremely consistent with how they do.
Yeah.
I don't feel like they have a huge amount of volatility in terms of results.
No, they actually don't. But... The game being different should help them because they're so aggressive and the game at the moment rewards aggression more than it should. And they just like their A hits on Nuke are fucking gorgeous. They're so good.
So this game is exciting because there is no good way to predict this game. There's literally no good way to predict it. Yeah,
and Snappy versus Carrigan as well, which is always good to watch.
It is, and Snappy is trying to hit that top five IGL of all time, yeah. Right? I truly think that there is
such a chip on his shoulder about it as well, which I love. I really love that edge Snappy has.
I think there is a real conversation that he starts to get talked in that if Ents wins like one or two more events, there's real conversation that says, hey. Someone at one point may have to say Snappy is the guy because you talked to me like a year and a half ago and you go, hey, we've got this random guy from Israel. We've got two players who have been kind of thrown aside by teams before, this up and comer, and then Snappy, who's the oldest IGL currently playing. And they're going to be a top three team in the world.
Consistently a top three team in the world.
Consistently a top three team.
While everyone else seems to flounder a bit. Well, I think what really goes in Snappy's favor is, as you say, like some of these players were like discarded. Like Diha was like a bundle of unrealized potential.
Yeah, so, he played for some weird teams to get there, but
he is a bundle of chaos. Like he has fantastic mechanics. But he was so up and down. He makes some odd decisions sometimes. Like, he will fight when he shouldn't, and he will hide when he should. Like, he makes odd decisions. But there was a player in there. And Snappy has seriously, got rid of all the rough edges and found the diamond in there. Because Diha is great now. But he, you know, when he first joined Ents, I was not convinced he was ever going to realize that potential. And I think that really
goes to Madden. Madden's the same. Madden was on the Godsent team with Stiko and stuff, and then they moved to FunPlus Phoenix. And you kept looking at that team going, there's something here.
Madden had pop-off games on that team, but he was never reliable.
There were so many problems with that team that weren't Madden related. Like to remind you that Zen was on that team.
God, yeah. Wow, that's a name I had not thought about in a long time.
Zen, Stiko, and Emmy were all on that team at the same time. Sonny was there when Emmy wasn't. Wow. That was a team.
Madden was so good on that team, and he's actually
But my point is that Madden was the guy because no one else was.
Yeah, when you watch him now, it's so clear he's made to be like a soldier. Like he is Cloud9 era Rush. He is a lockdown CT player and a battering ram on the T side. Like you send him in first and you follow him. You don't. Like, he is a battering ram, and he has his moments on this team, but he's not the guy you look to because he is a soldier. He follows the orders to the letter and does nothing else. And I will always respect players who do that and still look like good players, which is what Madden is.
I want to talk about the other BO3. Because this one, I don't think anyone would have guessed unless you were guessing for chaos. BetBoom, the team led by Nafany, which has a ton of just thrown away reject players.
In Russia. That isn't the same as anywhere else.
Yes. Thrown away reject players who all probably tried to sign with EG on the offseason, made their own team, and just kind of clapped everyone in this event.
It's so nice.
It's Zorti, former Forge player, Nafany, former Cloud9 player and Gambit player, Siren, former Spirit player, Chiron, former Virtus Pro player, Spirit, and Danizd,
who played for no one.
Boston Crab was the team before
Boston
this one.
Crab, isn't that a wrestling move? It's a wrestling move. I can't remember. It's like when you sit on their back and pull their legs.
But they grabbed four players that were on teams and no longer had teams and made this.
The thing is, in Russia, you can do that and still come up with a team that's got like...
In America, you get me and my four friends.
You try and do that in any other country and you get like... you get some weird mishmash team. You end up with like the ninth best team.
No, you know what you get? TSM.
Yeah, well, quite. You do it in Russia, you end up with Chiron, who is like, you know, star player potential. He's not there yet, but like, fucking hell, you watch the guy sometimes.
He's
like,
pretty good.
He's got the skill. Zorti, who was Falls' best player. And I've been told by a coach told me once, like, he's the fastest sniper. And he's like, he said Fours are the hardest team to play against in practice. It's like they shoot harder than anyone else. It's like Zorti's so quick. Like that's the level of AWPer that's discarded in Russia. Zorti would be a top three AWPer in any other country in the world.
Like America, when he tried to sell
EG. He'd be the best sniper in America. He'd be like second in Denmark. He'd be first in Sweden. He'd be first in, not in France or Ukraine, but you know. He's probably
basically outside of that.
In Russia, he's like third. He's like maybe fourth. Like, you've got fucking Monacy and Jame. Like, you got
and Shiro.
Like, Zorti's like the fourth best, third or fourth best offer in this country. And he's fucking brilliant. Like, Chiron is a really good player. Nafany was the in game leader of a team who won everything like 2 years ago. Like, how is this a discarded team? I don't really know anything about Danis. But he's probably pretty good.
Who cares? Does it really matter if you know anything about him when the other four players are the ones we just named?
And he's probably pretty good anyway. Like, it always seems to be the case with these Russian teams. The one you've never heard of is even better than the rest.
The problem is we need to talk about the team that they're facing.
Yeah.
Which is Complexity?
CS2, man. It's like, look... Even on LAN, there's still some pretty significant peakers advantage. And if any team is going to abuse overpeaking more than any other, it's an American team. They just overpeak everything and they win because it's CS2.
Allege has looked very good this tournament. JT had one of his opener against Monty was ridiculously insane. Halzerk looks like he kind of knows what's going on. There's a lot of good to like about Complexity right now. The problem with this team, and I will say this now, I've said it for the last 3.5 years, is not what they look like now. Mm-hmm. It's what do they look like in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Because this team is so fucking all over the place.
I remember, you know LS from League of Legends.
I do know LS, yes.
I remember him saying once that It's true in it was true in StarCraft back in the day. It's been true in every other esport he's ever watched. When a new game comes out, Americans do really well. People catch up, and then Americans never get there again because they know how to do the first 98% quicker than everyone else, and they never get that extra 2% because they just don't quite have the same grind. They don't have the same thing. It's a bit of a generalization. It's a massive generalization, but I do think about it. Because
there's obviously players who have. There's obviously players who have, but yes. Yeah. I mean, you can look through basically every esport and actually see that that's pretty true to a degree. I actually think Counter-Strike is the one esport that that's not true. That was not historically true.
Yeah, in CSGO, there was like I buy power, but in early.
But even with 1.6 in Source, I think that it kind of never was. But all right. That's a long time talking about Sydney. I want to quickly get to CS2. So I want to preface this with, we're going to talk about four different articles that came out of four different players who have said stuff about CS2. I don't want to spend more than like 10 minutes on this. There's a couple reasons why. One, Valve have updated this game, I think last time I checked, like 14 times in 16 days or something like that. So there is a strong possibility that we say something today on this podcast,
by tomorrow night, when
you listen to this, 17 things will have changed.
Yeah.
Because if there is something that I can say that is really good about Valve right now, they're not ignoring the game. They are definitely pushing updates. Whether they're the right updates or not, that remains to be seen. But they are pushing updates every single day. Or really close to it. The second thing is I think everyone's just kind of all over the place on this. I think the community has agreed on a couple things, and then once in a while I see that no one has any fucking clue about anything else. So I want to start with Floppy, who came out and was like, the game doesn't feel as rewarding as Global Offensive did.
I agree.
Because there's a lot of things that don't feel as good.
I agree.
I agree. We touched on this in the intro a little bit, and you said you've been playing less CS2 than you had been playing Global Offensive. And I'm kind of in the same boat. I've been playing more than I was playing Global Offensive, which I know is the exact opposite of what we just said, but it's mostly because I have a lot of friends who are like, hey, I want to play CS. Let's do it. As opposed to me going to play Counter-Strike.
Oh, yeah. I don't boot it up on my own at the moment, which I would do with Go.
Yeah, I don't really boot it up on my own either. Now, part of that is we're nearing the end of the TFT set, and I need to climb, so I'm doing important things there.
I've not even been playing much TFT recently. I've been playing a lot of Baldur's Gate, playing some Binding of Isaac again. I got back into that.
I need to play more TFT because I refuse to lose my gold streak. I know gold isn't that impressive, but I like having the little legend, the little
icon
tactician thing.
I got diamond before the mid set, like the mid set kind of mediocre.
So, but anyway, I refuse to not get it.
CS2.
So. Yeah, going back to this. So it doesn't I have said a lot of things about Counter-Strike in my lifetime. And this is something which I've said. I don't know if I said it publicly, but I've said it privately. Counter-Strike has the most good feedback on gunplay of any first-person shooter I've ever played, except the Ghost in Valorant, which I stand by the fact is just the most satisfying weapon to get a headshot with. Don't worry about that bit.
Nothing beats the CSGO Deagle. Absolutely nothing.
Well, I can't hit a Deagle headshot, so it doesn't matter. So I don't know what that means. But this game does not feel as good as the old one did. It was one of the big things that I always said that Global Offensive did, even though it had been out for 10 years, which was the gunplay felt good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It felt, and this is a weird experience that I may have been the only one to have. It felt that even though I'm using a keyboard and mouse with no vibration motors in it, it felt that there was some amount of like Call of Duty controller vibration in the best way. It doesn't feel like that anymore.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean. There is a level to which it's just unfamiliar, so of course it doesn't feel as good. But I don't know, man. I get kills where I'm like, I'm not aiming at his head there. Like, I'm just not aiming at his head, and I've just one-tapped him. And it's like, oh, you know, you actually fired halfway through the flick and you're on him. And I'm like, I don't think I was, but it's really hard to disprove. And it just looks really weird. And I think that's part of the reason warping feels strange, is because you're so used to how when you shot, it would fire at the end of the tick on go, and that doesn't happen on two. But even then, I've had AWP shots that I swear down have gone through people. And I think the peeker's advantage is just absurd right now. Like, certainly online, but even on LAN, you're seeing, like, sometimes you just get, like, Xantara's peaked on LAN, which shouldn't happen. And I'm like,
yeah,
it can't be the lag comp, because it's happening, you know, I'm seeing it happen online. Less, but I'm seeing it happen online. Like, where AWPers have no chance. And don't get me wrong, I hate AWPers. If it was down to me, the game would be 5v5 rifles. I don't care. But you cannot hold an angle. If you can't hold an angle with an AWP, you certainly can't hold it with an M4. It's not possible. And you have to just peek everything. And people say, oh, you just got to adapt to the new game and just peek everything. So that's not interesting. If I wanted to just peek everything, I'd play COD. It completely ruins some styles of play as well. Like, I can't play connector on overpass on the T side the way I played it on go. I can't hold an angle.
Yeah. Well, some of that also happens to be, I don't know, for me is lack of one ways, because I used to play.
Oh, I mean, I have no issue with lack of one ways. But no one ways, I think, is a good.
No,
change.
I have no issue with that either. I don't have an issue with it either. It's just more of a statement. Okay. Next article. JL, some superstars are skeptical about CS2 and not putting in as much work, and this was definitely partially at least pointed towards Simple.
I think so, yeah.
Well, there's another bit that says, you've been vocal about how much you're enjoying the game, while Simple, on the other hand, hasn't. He said a couple times he doesn't really love it so far, kind of what you're talking about now. I think that the bit that JL kind of said in this was that some people kind of feel, I don't know if it's an actual feeling, but some people say, oh, Valve's just going to roll all of this back. They're going to roll the whole subtick system back. We're going to go
they
back
won't.
To 128
they
tick. They're not going
they should,
to,
but, they won't.
But they're not going to, but I think there's people that are like, this is all we want. And other than that, I'm going to kind of just be upset about it and not really practice this game. And I think that's kind of where they're at. And I think JL is wisely said, and I don't think he's the only person that's doing this, just saying, this is the hand I've been dealt. I'm gonna work at it.
I think if you're a pro, you have to take it seriously and you have to try and get better at it. But I also think it's important for them to say that the game doesn't feel right.
Yeah, no, I think here's my big thing, and this goes into the Twists interview that also happened. Yeah, there's a lot of interviews here, which is that constructive criticism is a great thing, saying this is wrong, this is what you should be doing to fix it. At the beginning of the game, we felt there was a lot of that kind of stuff with was it the interpret or something like that? That was like, hey, this is wrong. It feels better if you do this. And Valve then went and did that.
Yeah.
But it feels like people are complaining just for the sake of complaining. Not that they're wrong to complain, but it feels like they're complaining and just saying, this is wrong.
Well, I mean, what other choice do we have? Every time somebody says, like, oh, this is wrong, so I changed the interpret, it feels right, you get full of fucking, what Launders calls maths guys, like, actually, that doesn't make any difference at all. And then Valve tell you, oh, no, actually, that doesn't make any difference at all, and patch it, and then the game feels fucking worse. Look, what other option do we have than to say this feels wrong? Because every time you try and make an explanation, some guy on Reddit just says, like, oh, actually, no, this doesn't work. This is actually not tied to the netcode. It's actually not tied. I don't care what it is. Just fucking fix it. I don't care how it... I don't know how the fucking game works. I just know it doesn't work fucking right. Get really het up about this. And it's like, you see, like, there was a guy on Reddit the other day who was saying, oh, actually, no, wide swinging doesn't feel any better on... Like, it's exactly the same as it was on CSGO. Some guy asked him...
That's cap.
Some guy asked him, how many hours do you have in Go? He said, 1,000. And then I tweeted that. Some guy's fucking tweeted me saying, oh, you shouldn't be dismissing his point. He's got 1,000 hours. Yes, you fucking should. Yes, you should. I don't care. No, nobody under a certain rank, their opinions don't matter. My opinion doesn't matter because I'm not actually any good at the game. But it still matters more than fucking Johnny's 1,000 hours on Reddit, who hasn't played enough of the game to understand what a wide swing is.
Why do you think I haven't made a single comment about how I think the game
exactly
is? My
right.
opinion
like,
really doesn't matter.
Exactly. You're like, I think it feels wrong. But at the end of the day, my opinion doesn't matter to Valve. Because I'm not that good. I'm better than most people, admittedly, but I'm still not that good. Like the Dunning-Kruger effect, I'm somewhere around here. Like I'm on the downswing, but I've beaten the hump.
I am at best an average player.
Yeah.
My opinion does not matter.
Like, I think I'm like top like couple of percent, but at the end of the day, you don't realize how far away from the elite you are until you get to like 1%.
Yeah.
Like I've got mates who are much better than me who are still like, no, pros would kick my shit in.
All right, let's talk about this last bit, which is on your favorite topic. And I'm going to limit you to about 3 minutes on this because otherwise we're going to get too long in this episode. Snappy came out and said that MR12 is a horrible tactical change and it dumbs down Counter-Strike.
Yep. He's 100% right. Snappy's completely right. And he's right for the exact reasons I've said, which is that you do not have time to adapt. And the best calling and the best rounds happen in rounds 11 to 15. This is the point I made a month ago and got called a fucking idiot for. But Snappy is completely right. Like, how many times have you played the first like six rounds of a half and you're like, I do not understand their setup. And then you eventually get a handle on their CT setup because it's a bit weird and you know how to counter it. And then you start winning and you start, you know, you win like four of the next six rounds. You've got another three rounds at the end where you're like, right, I know what I'm doing now. I know how to punish it. You lose those three rounds and it just becomes about anti-stratting. Like, you can't adapt anymore because the half ends before you've adapted or just as you've started to adapt, the half ends. Whereas that just means that it's all about preparation and anti-stratting, which is far less interesting and far less, it requires much less skill to anti-strat than it does to adapt on the fly. And it will reduce the impact of a great in-game leader. And it might just be better just like do what Cloud9 do and have no in-game leader and five-star players and just go, well, you don't need any tactical depth. You don't need to be able to adapt because the half ends by the time they figured it out anyway. Like, it's and it's not even just on a pro level this is an issue. In my own games, I'm finding like I'm getting into a groove on the T side and then the half is just ending. Like, I want those last three rounds. When you're having a good game, you want those last three rounds. Like, the only time MR12 feels better is when it's a complete stomp one way or the other. I had a game yesterday where we lost both pistols and we won like six of eight gun rounds or something and finished in a draw because matchmaking for some fucking reason doesn't have overtime. And like, we're clearly better than them. We're better in gun rounds. We're winning more gun rounds than they are. And it just doesn't, like, you're not rewarded for that. And you can argue that like pistol rounds having importance is a good thing because pistol rounds are a test of skill, and they are. But they're a test of a slightly different skill. And they shouldn't be the deciding factor. It's nigh on impossible to win in regulation having lost both pistols now. Losing both pistols with a conversion is minimum four rounds of the 13 you need. Like, you then have to go 12 and 8 just to go even. You have to win 60% of the rounds just to go to overtime. It was like 56% or something on go, because it'd be 4 of 15. And it's just like, that is significant. And people say, oh, each gun round matters more now. But gun rounds as a whole matter less, because the pistol round matters more. It's probably the most important round in the game now. It's the only one that guarantees basically two rounds, unless the T's get a... And another problem is if the T's lose the pistol but plant the bomb and then force back, the CT's don't get an AWP till round seven. If you win with Galils on round two, having lost the pistol, the CT's have like 1,400 each. They have to buy and then eco. So you're 3-1 and the AWPer still cannot afford an AWP. So then you buy, if you lose 4-1, 5-1, it's 5-1 until you can get an AWP. You're halfway through the half and you haven't had an AWP. And then you get an AWP and you fucking peak as advantage and you lose anyway.
I said this when they announced MR12, and this is the only thing I am certain I am correct about. Otherwise, my opinion is whatever. It doesn't, like, again, I am at best an average player. I played this game casually. I played one season of ESEA Open and got like two wins. Like, I'm at best an average player. The in NA, I got 2 wins. Yeah. That's an important distinction. They need to change the economy.
Oh, yeah. But I
a considerable amount. Because my other... For if they're going to stay with MR12, which I do not see a reason why Valve won't stay with MR12, not because...
Because they're stubborn.
I think that they think it's good, or because I think Valve says that we're doing MR12, we're sticking with MR12, that's it. We're not changing it. Which, Valve's right, but I think a lot of us are in agreement that we don't think that that's the right thing. If they're sticking with MR12, the economy needs to change to be, allow pistol rounds to be less impactful. To allow you to get more gun rounds that are more impactful. That's my bit on it.
Yeah,
we have one more story for today.
Yeah, I think changing the economy helps, but I still think even with a better economy, MR12 is still shit.
It doesn't fix everything. It doesn't fix everything, but they need to fix something.
It's a band-aid to a problem they create.
That would be correct. But that seems like almost every problem in Counter-Strike. Well, yeah. Hey, skin gambling problems created by skins.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah.
If we didn't have skins, there would have been no skin gambling.
The R8.
Okay. That's not a problem. That's a solution.
It's a problem now. Because it's fucking rubbish.
It's awesome. The R8's awesome.
I like it, but it's rubbish.
No, it's awesome. Okay. We have one more story. I talked a couple weeks ago about Kadian leaving, and then we talked about it last week. There's been some adjustments in that. There was conversation, I think, of where is Kadian going to go? And you and I had suggested Liquid. There were some people, I think, what was it, Nip or something? I don't remember. There were a lot of thoughts on where Kadian would go, and I don't think any of them were pretty certain, but it seems like Kadian now wants to go to Liquid. And it says that this is like the primary destination and this is the thought process. I think it benefits both teams. Yep. So something I've been thinking about a lot about recently involving that is what happens to OC. He's obviously the guy that would be easily displaced, right? With Yukinder giving the IGL role back to Daps, and Daps obviously not being a permanent stay. Assuming Kadian comes over to Liquid, that would mean IGL at least on Kadian, right? And so you have a question of, is Kadian going to be a rifler or are they going to move OC? And I think the answer is neither. I think the answer is actually OC is I think OC is one of the better riflers in North America.
Okay. Big OC rifles.
I think if you want to stick OC, I think if you want to stick OC and NAF, OC probably just rifles. Actually, I think Kadian's a great offer too.
OC is a good rifler. He is a better rifler than people give him credit for.
So something I realized the other day, I didn't realize, I saw it on the internet. I couldn't tell you where, I have no credit for this. The best AWPers in the world are also some of the best riflers in the world.
Yeah, I saw Luz in the...
Most of the pretty good AWPers are just pretty good riflers too.
Yeah.
And especially in CS2 where we're talking about how the AWP means less.
Yeah.
Those player stocks kind of rise a lot because... You don't need to buy the AWP. It's not that the AWP is this overpowered one-shot killing machine. Like, it requires a lot more skill to use now, and or whatever it requires to use, and it doesn't feel as good.
Mm-hmm.
And so those players who can AWP if need be, but are also real good on rifles, are really valuable. Simple, Zywoo, Device, all really good riflers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, they are.
So... I think moving OC, I'm in for moving OC to rifle.
I don't hate it.
And saying OC will be the secondary.
I really don't hate it as much as I thought I did when you said it first. I had like a visceral reaction. I thought about it some more. I'm like, no, I've seen OC rifle and he's not bad. He is a good rifler.
You know, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
And the I think the other question is you've said you want to keep some amount of NA in the team. You're keeping NAF obviously because. If Liquid parts with NAF, there will
be
a lot of words and protests held. there will be actual riots in Los Angeles and Ucharest. But, like, who do you get to replace OC? Like, who is your next best rifler to get? Obviously not Rain Waker. you start going through the list of, like...
Yeah, if you want to keep an American
who's your
well
next replacement?
It's like Swisher, I guess, but...
there's, I don't think Swisher wants to move on from
Maybe
right
now.
No, I
don't, but that'd be about your best bet.
And if I was Swisher, I wouldn't want to. Not because I think Liquid's a clusterfuck, but I think that Amadi has this good thing going that they can kind of start moving themselves all up together, yeah. and that's the right way to do it. But I don't know. I'm in. I'm in for it. And on that, whatever that is, we're going to end for the day.
Yeah.
You can find us on Twitter at Logan Ramp-Up, at AZS, and at ReadTLDR. We'll be back again next week with results of Sydney and... Well,
anything
I think global championship starts in Asia soon.
Probably.
I don't know. We'll figure it out. We'll see you all next week.